to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today's interview is with Warren Fay, a thriller writer whose books use some amazing ecosystems. And I wanted to interview Warren because I just found his books really imaginative in terms of sort of a physical world. And although his books are set, you know, on Earth, they're not sort of, I guess they are speculative fiction, but the kind of lost world style. And his creatures reminded me of some of the things in Avatar, which are kind of related to things we know, but also a bit different. So anyway, that interview is coming up. Here's my interview. Here's my update, I mean, in the meantime. So you can probably tell I'm quite tired and my house is in chaos as we are selling everything and preparing to move back to England. I've been in Australia 4 years and New Zealand 7 years, so it's been a while since I've lived in England. And we want to move back with very little. Part of why is because we just don't know where we're going to live yet. It will be in the southeast, probably London or Oxford, but who knows? I will be working in London, so it has to be commutable. But I'm feeling really happy because I am kind of a nomad and I like to move around, and so it actually feels very good to be sort of divesting myself of everything. And we're already looking forward to things in England. I'm planning the literary festivals, although I'm going to miss the Hay Festival, which is upsetting, but we'll definitely make it next year. Also getting sort of tickets for the theatre. We're going to see Much Ado About Nothing with David Tennant, who's in Doctor Who. We used to be in Doctor Who. So we're sort of excited about doing those things that you miss out on being in Australia. So I also have a trip sort of planned for the Paris catacombs, as I have a scene set there for Prophecy, my next thriller. And also I have a couple in the Czech Republic, so planning to get over there as well. So clearly I have a lot of things to write. And I should say I'm definitely not getting enough time to write at the moment. So my day job has also gone crazy. I'm working really crazy hours because I'm on a project that's half in Montreal, Canada, and half in Australia. So it means I'm getting up very early and working on the day job, whereas I normally get up very early and work on the Creative Pen. So, but I might get to go to Montreal from London. So exciting times. There's just a lot going on. A lot going on in my other life that is not, you know, sort of writing and the Creative Pen. And you guys don't get to hear about that very often. So yeah, it's a bit of a change. So one of the things I'm also doing is getting rid of nearly 1,000 physical books. And some of you will be weeping at that. But I actually feel quite zen about the whole thing. Many of these books I shipped from England to New Zealand to Australia. And there is no way I'm shipping them back again because, you know, it's very expensive. They're very heavy. And I've also paid for storage over time. And essentially, I want to be very selective as to what I want to keep. So I've allowed myself, I've got three small boxes of things that I'm keeping, things that I'm emotionally attached to or were gifts, you know, that are important. But most of the things I will be getting rid of. And part of being able to do that, I think, stems from the floods. You may remember that Queensland had some floods a few months ago back in January, and it was pretty devastating here. My house didn't get flooded, but I was sitting here, you know, sort of in the area and waiting for evacuation, and the lights went out, power went, and, you know, essentially I was sitting here in the dark, and I'd written a whole list of everything for insurance. And when I left, you know, I actually left to go away because my husband wasn't here and I was just miserable here on my own. And so I left, and when I shut the door, I just thought, you know, if it does flood, it's not that big a deal. I can replace everything. And, you know, 11 years ago when I left England, it was hard to find books. I mean, as in you bought books from bookstores and you didn't know if you'd be able to find them again. But now I know I can find any of these books online, even if they used to be out of print. A lot of them are coming back.
And many of them I now have on the Kindle. So I'm actually replacing physical books with Kindle books now, as I prefer to read on the Kindle. And of course, I can have 3,500 on the Kindle, and I only have 1,000 print books. So that's pretty exciting there. So yeah, so I'm getting rid of books. Also very interesting, the fact that in Australia, books are around $30. Which is the equivalent at the moment to about 35 US dollars per book because of the exchange rate. It's ridiculously expensive. And the secondhand book market is ridiculously cheap in the other direction. So yeah, pretty much most of these books will be a charitable donation. I'll be giving them to Lifeline or something like that. So anyway, I guess that's a bit about what I'm up to at the moment. And as I said, I am thinking about prophecy. I've plotted sort of 26 scenes. I had intended to write 1,000 words a day in April, and it's April the 26th, and I've written 10,000 words. So not really up to scratch, but I have started, so that's good. And in the meantime, people are signing up for Prophecy every day, which is hilarious, at prophecynovel.com. And because at the end of Pentecost, I have a little sign up. I say, if you enjoyed Pentecost, sign up here for Prophecy. But at the moment, excitingly, Pentecost is at number 66 in Action Adventure, which is where I really feel like I want to rank. It's number 24 in Religious Fiction, which I've ranked in Religious Fiction for the last sort of 10 weeks since I launched. So it's all going very well, but I'm really happy to be ranking in Action Adventure, because although Pentecost and Prophecy as well will have religious undercurrents, I don't think it is religious fiction in that it's not, you know, Christian fiction. But anyway, very happy with that. I'm selling around 200 to 250 books per week. 90% of those are ebooks. And I'm thinking a lot about what Donald Maas said a few weeks ago when I interviewed him, and that was a video interview, if you're wondering where that is. There's basically a 5-book threshold which you need to get a critical mass of people who know you and buy your books. And so it's going to take me a few years to get to 5 novels, but I'm definitely aiming for that. And I can see that if I've got 5 books selling, you know, 200 to 250 books a week, then I'm going to be making more money. And that's kind of the thing that Joe Comrath and others are doing. Okay, other things. I am intending to answer some of the questions from the survey I did a few months ago in the upcoming podcast. Plus, I'm going to do a special episode of me reading the first few chapters of Pentecost for a mini relaunch I'm doing over Pentecost Sunday weekend in June, when I'm going to aim to sort of push back up the Amazon charts and see what happens with that. So I haven't actually read my fiction aloud yet, so that will be quite exciting. I did a guest reading for The Machine of Death, which should be out soon on their website, but I'm going to try and read my own stuff, which is going to be fun. I also wanted to mention that I do take guest posts for The Creative Pen. You've probably seen some of them around for my text posts. I'm actively seeking guest posts for the sort of end of May to June period, when I will be moving countries and it will be crazy and I'll be finding somewhere to live and I won't be next to the internet all the time. And so I'm actively looking for those articles. I get the content and you get traffic and a new audience, and you get to add a promo about your book or about whatever you're doing to the end of the article. So you can see all the things you need to know about that at thecreativepen.com/guest posting. So yeah, I hope you will consider doing guest posts for the show. And I also take audio sort of podcast excerpts as well. So if you have an advert for your book that is in audio format, I can stick it in the podcast feed. So just wanted to let you know there, I do like to promote other authors, and I hope we can all sort of build our author platform together. Right, on with the interview with Warren Fay. I hope you enjoy it. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen, and this is Warren Fay. Warren is the author of 4 novels, including his latest, Pandemonium, which is a brilliant plot with 2 fascinating ecosystems, which we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Warren.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you on the show. So first of all, I recently read and reviewed your book Pandemonium, which is fantastic. Can you maybe start by explaining the story a bit for the listeners?
Sure. The story basically offers a fresh take on the exotic world discovery plot, which has been going on since The Lost World and Conan Doyle and the Island of Dr. Moreau and Mysterious Island and all these great classic science fiction and adventure stories, except that this one is using a more cutting-edge approach, looking at what actually creates exotic worlds. And now that post-Darwin, we understand that ecosystems in isolation continue to evolve on separate paths, this is a better approach to finding out, discovering some place on Earth that's been isolated for so long that all the denizens of that world are completely exotic. So that's the scientific premise that it takes, and it's pretty original. Usually you see a lost world frozen in time, just there, or something that's been genetically engineered by mad scientists. There have been a couple of other tropes that have been used, but this is a much more realistic approach to it, a splinter of life that has gone off on its own path from a very distant past to the present. And taking that as a premise, as a scientific premise, you start out with a novel with a team of scientists who have in the past discovered one of these exotic alien worlds previously and have become sought after experts in the field of discovering these exotic places. And therefore they are, and of course one of those places they discovered is called Henders Island. And we learn all sorts of mysterious and dangerous things about this place, that it was a very, ruthless ecosystem, which had to be destroyed before it spread to the rest of the planet. It had been isolated for 500 million years. So there is one species that they were able to save, and those are an intelligent sort of mammal-like crustacean, which has, they have six legs. And they've been put into isolation from the rest of the world as people ponder what they can possibly do with them, if it's safe for them to enter human society, if it's safe for humans, if it isn't safe for them. And as that's being determined, two of the scientists who rescued them from Henders Island and are now sought after in the world of science are sort of kidnapped by a Russian oligarch and promised along the way that they will see an exotic world that is right up their alley. And he takes them to an underground city from the former Soviet Union. And they discover in that city a new, incredible ecosystem that stretches for miles and miles in an underground cavern adjacent to this city built during the Soviet era. So that's the premise of the story.
Mm. No, and I really enjoyed reading the book. And of course, I read the second one, and it didn't suffer at all from not knowing the first one, which is great and very good in a series writer. But I wondered, how on earth did you come up with these ideas? And you've even got some little drawings, haven't you, in the back, which were quite interesting, because when I found the drawings, they didn't actually look like what was in my imagination. So that was quite interesting. So how did you come up with these creatures?
Well, this is something that writing the first book, which the second book is supposed to be independent. You're supposed to be able to read that by itself. So I'm actually thrilled to find out that you had read the second book first, hadn't known about the first book, and enjoyed the second book by itself. That's how I planned it. And the first book, though, when I started to work on these sort of exotic, very authentic sounding biologies, in the midst of working out what these creatures on Henders Island in the first book would have evolved from, I set upon setting it back far enough that they could have diverged from the rest of life on Earth into a very radical way. And so I went back to the Cambrian era, and back then the world was populated by arthropods, which are shells on the outside, skeletons, exoskeletal creatures. So I began to think, well, what would happen if these had been the progenitors of life on land and had started to evolve into sort of proto-mammals? Mm-hmm. And what would life look if that had happened? And as I was doing that, I realized that I needed to answer a lot of questions from scientists. So I reached out to various scientists and asked one of them, look, I'm working on a novel, and I need to know about hypoosmoregulation in crustaceans. And he looked at me, he sent me an email back, and he explained in a very detailed description of how crustaceans navigate hypoosmoregulation. And he said, by the way, what on earth kind of novel could you possibly be working on that you need the answer to this question? And I explained it to him, and he said, count me in. That's a fantastic idea. I'll be there to help with any kind of research you want. And he invited me back to Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution and gave me a tour of all the places that I had written about in the novel so that I could make it more authentic. And met the scientists in the laboratories and watched them studying squid axons through electron microscopes and everything else. And it was really fantastic. And with him and some artists, I carefully designed the entire ecosystem that is on Hecker's Island and also the entire ecosystem that is in Pandemonium, which is based on a molluscan ancestry as opposed to an arthropodic ancestry.
Mm.
And of course, they clash in Pandemonium.
No, it's brilliant. And I'm a scuba diver, so Woods Hole for me is kind of that amazing place. I would love to go there as well. So are you a scuba diver yourself?
I have scuba dived. I was supposed to get trained to do it, but I just sort of lied my way into it at a resort. Was able to dive the wall in Bermuda, which is where the abyss was supposed to occur. So on my very first dive, I went to a place that people all over the world dream about going. And had a fantastic time.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of these otherworldly things you see underwater, and I came up once from a dive and I found this thing and I thought I'd discovered something new and everyone knew what it was, but for me it was just amazing to see creatures that I'd never even imagined underwater. So yeah, I was just really impressed with that about you. So you said that you did some research. I'm interested in what you're going to do with these ideas next. So to me, it would lend itself to being some kind of graphic novel or, something more with all the work you've done. Have you got any ideas along those lines?
Oh, yes. In fact, right now we're working on a movie based on the first book, Fragment. And of course, then a sequel will be Pandemonium. I do other ones, in addition to that, there is a video game which is designed around Fragment, and I'm sure we're going to work on one about Pandemonium as well, and a book about the field guide to Pandemonium and the field guide to Hecker's Island, where extensive illustrations and descriptions of all the creatures and the ecosystems would be there. I have scientists and artists that are raring to go on that. So that's
brilliant. Excellent. I look forward to seeing more about that. So I'm also interested in your publishing experience, because I'm a little confused as to whether you are traditionally published, whether you self-published, do you do some kind of mix? How does that work?
Well, I've been writing novels since I was 12 years old, and finished three before I was out of high school. So, and then, of course, since I wasn't able to go to college, after 10 kids in my family, and that was right in the worst economic time in the world, right in 79, 80, and it was impossible for me to go to school. I was told flat out not going to college. So I left school, and I got a job at McDonald's, and I slept in a bed next to a woman's car in her garage, and I wrote every night for the last 30 years. Went from job to job. After McDonald's, I decided that I'd get my day jobs to somehow relate to writing. So I got a job as a typist, learned to type, word processor, learned word processor, publishing house, learned that, and then became an editor, and then became a managing editor. So all of those jobs along the way over those 30 years taught me various skills so that I wasn't just wasting my time during the day. Then I would come home and I'd write. And so I was a starving writer for all that time. And finally, I decided, I'd written several novels that were, I considered really fantastic, beautiful masterpieces. And those are harder to get published. So I decided finally, look, what kind of great, I've developed all these skills writing all these different types of novels. And so why don't I just ply my trade and bend my my experience and skills that I've developed towards doing something popular and commercial. And what are publishers like? And what do I like out of the popular, you know, range of fiction that's out there? And I've always liked Michael Crichton. I like to read a book that I learn something in the real world about. And even if it's fantasy, if there's some sort of wisdom or something that I can apply to the real world by reading it, I prefer that. So just something that's sort of like, I don't know, literary masturbation sort of thing. I don't get anything out of that. So I decided, okay, that's the kind of book I want to write, and it's going to require lots of interesting research. And all my life I've researched biology. I've hunted for fossils, you know, even when I was a kid. All through my life I've done this. So that's what fascinated me the most. So I decided, all right, you know, the idea for Fragment, the first book, came to me in an absolute flash. The whole story was there in a moment. And I'd been trying to think of a plot for a really popular mass appeal book. And I dropped everything and I just started working on it. And I didn't stop until it was done. And I sent it in, and the rest was history. It's published by 20 publishers, 18 public languages around the world, Random House, you know, made a deal with for me, and practically gave me a heart attack, because that was the company that I wanted, of course, to be published through since I was 16 years old and finished my first novel. So that was my journey, and it took 30 years. And so that was spectacular. Now it happened. I think it was like one of the last of the big debut novels, and for the big deal novels. There was a bidding war at the London Book Fair, and, you know, went for record prices and all sorts of stuff. And so I flew to New York, and I flew to London, and I met, you know, my publishers. Had an incredible story of meeting my publishers in London. As I was there, I came in. There was a wine reception for me, and the gates opened up to HarperCollins. It was like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. I walked in, and here they were, you know, feting me with these toasts, and this warm, warm, cool group of people coming up to me and asking me, "How in the world did you, you know, duplicate what Michael Crichton does?" And I said, "Well, he's a great master. Thank you very much for, you know, your compliments." Then the crowd parts, and a very, very nice woman who looked very distraught came up to me and shook my hands and said, "You know, so proud to have you, to publish you." And she was very moved, and I thought it was really odd that she had tears in her eyes. I said, "Well, you know, thank you very much. I just want to say that, you know, without Michael Crichton, invented this kind of modern day thriller with science, you know, I couldn't have done this." And she nodded her head, and she said, "Thank you. We're so happy, and good luck." And so she left, and that's when people turned to me and said, "That's Michael Crichton's editor." And so, you know, all of this was just a dream come true, right? And then after this party, and immediately after, someone came, rushed up to us and said, "I'm sorry, but I have dreadful news. Michael Crichton just died." And this was all in the space of about 2 hours when this, you know, this happened. So I think because of that, there was an intense pressure put on the expectations for my book. He died, so a lot of people were thinking, well, who does this imposter think he is? Filling his shoes that aren't even cold yet, you know. There's nothing that could have been further from my mind, of course, during the entire process of writing the book. But a lot of people had sort of a grudge against this book being called the next Michael Crichton and all that kind of stuff. Now, other people were wanting that and were happy and were looking for it, putting a lot of pressure on it. So at the same time, the entire global economy was collapsing. The publishing world was imploding, and the piracy issue was taking off. So I think more copies of the first book have been downloaded illegally by pirates than actually sold in the United States. Now, you know, that's devastating. Now, there were a lot of copies that were sold in the United States, but, you know, when more of them are downloaded, it really does affect the bottom line. And so all of that, all in all, and I wrote the sequel, which I knew would stand alone and yet would actually carry forward some of the themes from the first book. And to do both of those things simultaneously is a tricky thing to do. And So I'm very proud of the book, but you know, I find myself in a situation where Random House was not able to agree with me about the direction that I took. So they wanted me to change things that were just not going to work because I have a Hollywood producer who was making a movie and video games and toys and all kinds of things that go on going. The things were not dovetailing. The approaches were not working together. And so I had to seek other ways to publish the book. So what I did was a week after Random House said, we're not comfortable with the approach you're taking, I put the book out myself, which thankfully that's the other thing that's happening now is that authors can ebook. They can they can go straight to the public instantly and, you know, put it into the court of public opinion, which was never possible in the past. You know, so it was a great thing to be able to do. The book was available for a week. 400 people downloaded, including you. You were one of the few who got through that mouse hole and grabbed it. And so there was a great reception. Lots of people really liked it. And then as soon as that happened, my agent was like, what are you doing? You can't put it out there. We've got to sell it to a traditional publisher. Yank it off there. So I did. And since then, we've been trying to find some other people who will see the book for what I wanted to do with it and publish it traditionally. So in the meantime, I dusted off some old books of mine that were my great favorite, you know, philosophical masterpieces that don't fit into categories that are easily commercial. And I published those too. I said, well, I'll put those out, make those available. So I guess I'm both. And a lot of authors are now. They're kind of saying, look, I can do my own thing, and also I'll do some stuff for traditional publishers. So.
No, that's fantastic. And it's funny, people say, well, how do you find books to read? And I go to, often, at least once a week, I go to the Kindle, you know, the last 30 days in the thriller genre. And that's where I saw your book and, you know, downloaded the sample and everything. So, yeah, it's really funny. And now, of course, it's not available for sale. So
I can't tell you how many letters I get of people saying, when is it going to be available? You know, how could you, yank it off there?
I'm interested then, because you mentioned Umberto Eco, and he has been my block for many years because I always thought I wanted to write like him. And of course, not many people can write like him. And then I changed things and decided to just write like me. But how do you deal then with the sort of the stigma of the commercial versus the literary and the self-published versus the traditional?
It's interesting. Things are kind of topsy-turvy. Once you get into the publishing business, you're a thriller writer. All kinds of people say, okay, now you're a thriller writer. That's it. If you want to write something else, you've got to have a different name. You've got to have a pseudonym to do that. If you look back at authors like Mark Twain, who wrote everything, travel logs, children's books, you know, literary books, comedies, satires, dark comedies, dark novels, biographies, everything, and it was all under, well, not his name, but his pen name, Mark Twain. He didn't have to come up with a different identity for everything that he wrote. But the way the publishing world is kind of categorized and split up in the org charts within publishing companies themselves, it caters to the shelf space in bookstores and to the distribution and promotion and marketing apparatus that's set up for each type of book. And so they really just don't have a lot of crossover, you know, that allows an author to be all that an author is. And so, ironically, the literary books that I hold near and dear to myself, those are easier to publish yourself. You know, James Joyce published a Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man himself. So, you know, that's kind of what you can do with those books because they're harder to sell. Of course they're harder to sell than commercial books, right? That's what commercial books, you know, that's why you write a commercial book, it's easier to sell. So it's actually a wonderful kind of new option that people have today, authors have. You can keep your own name on it, and you can still get it published. You have to keep reinventing your name and your persona to write different types of books.
No, I agree with you. I want to write all kinds of things, and, you know, I like my name.
Come on. I mean, And Stephen King now can get away with it. You're no Stephen King. Well, Stephen King had to get there somehow. And and if you ever treat yourself as anything less than the top, then you won't be the top. So you've got to look at yourself as Stephen King or Ernest Hemingway or William Shakespeare. I mean, you have to go for it because let's face it, as a writer, you are spending untold hours alone inside while everyone else is playing around and having fun inside, and you are focused alone writing and doing nothing but that. And if you aren't going for it all the way, what a colossal waste of your life. You know, you better be aiming at the top, because otherwise it's a pointless waste of time. So that's, and it's so much time to do it. But, you got to be somewhat crazy and egomaniacal and believe that people are really going to care about what you're saying.
No, that's fantastic. Well, it's a really great place to finish on, I think, the inspirational ending. So where can people find you and your books?
Well, you can find some new books of mine, Escaping America, my sort of Rebel Without a Cause, it's 1984 book. And that's now available at Nook and Kindle on Amazon. I published it myself. And also The Core, which is sort of a Stone Age parable, fable. That's a shorter novel, but it's very sort of cynical and Stone Age book. And it's available at Kindle and Nook as well. And a collection of my short stories, a Sherlock Holmes story that I wrote, and several other kind of adventure tales. And that's available as well on Kindle and Nook. And I just am finishing two other novels, a graphic novel, and also an epic fantasy. And then, of course, Pandemonium, hoping to get that published through a traditional publisher soon.
Great. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Warren.
Well, thank you, Joanne. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!